That's one of the most depressing stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's up there.
But you know what? I love it.
You must kill at least 79 episodes of the Insert Credit Podcast to move on. Alex Jaffe does not waste weapons. Frank Zifaldi tries to touch all booty. Mm-hmm. Tim Rogers does not touch skulls. And Brandon Sheffield tries to hurt the wizard every time he sees him.
That makes sense.
I touch this a lot of skulls, though. I touch dog skulls all the time.
I don't get the reference.
I don't either.
Someday.
Oh, do you guys really not? Okay, I'll explain.
I get the reference. But explain it, Frank.
No, it's the opening tutorial to Skull and Crossbones. Skulls and Crossbones for the NES. Says all those things.
That's the thing I haven't played.
It tells you not to touch booty, and it tells you to touch all booty, and to hurt a wizard every time you see him. And
no, I remember. This was the thing that you got a lot of retweets on, and I retweeted it earlier on. I remember that now.
Who was it that retweeted that? Was it
William Gibson?
Yeah, and also Grant from MythBusters was a fan of that tweet.
I'm going to go ahead and trump you by saying that William Gibson emailed me in 2003, so I'm cooler than you. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, not true.
He emailed you, and he said, "Please stop trying to contact me. I am not interested."
That is exactly what he said, yeah. That's exactly
really
what he said.
You really rock with the console cowboys in cyberspace.
Yeah,
here we go.
I wish William Gibson would retweet me. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize I was talking.
Yeah. I didn't either. So what we do here at the Insert Credit Podcast is I introduce a topic and we talk about it for 6 seconds, 6 minutes.
6 seconds. Wow. Very fast over here.
Let's do a 6 second edition. Let's do that.
Let's do that for episode 80. That'll be fun. I'm serious. We'll do something like that. But we'll wait for that to come when it happens. Right now it's a standard 6 minute per question affair. Going to do 9 of those and a lightning round. Our first topic is this. Complete this slogan. Video games need less blank and more blank. Ideally, the blanks should rhyme or start with a few of the same letters.
I don't think you had to even say that. I think we probably would have done that.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I'm gonna start with less bling and more sting.
Okay.
Less bling and more spring, I would say.
I would say
spring because jumps are kind of too squishy. Jumps are too they're too just linear in most action games now.
But we're good with less bling as in less fluff, right? Less extraneous crap. So less bling, more spring. I like sting too because it's like, you know, actually do something here. Don't just, you know, lob a softball at everybody.
Yeah.
How about less fluff, more tough?
So
less fluff, here, more tough. That's pretty good.
I'm going to kind of not follow that exact model, but I feel that it's still in the spirit in saying that we should have a little less conversation, a little more action.
Okay.
A little bit less conversation, a little bit more con. Wait, sorry.
Well, it's a reference to a song, but also it's true.
Yeah. A little bit less.
Less talking about video games, more making video games.
So let's talk more.
A little bit more conversation? A little bit less conversation. A little bit more conservation. I don't think
a little more inflammation.
A little bit more inflammation is more lava levels. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, more lava levels.
Actually, isn't every goddamn level in a video game the lava level now? Isn't it just like that's all anybody wants to see is he's got a war guy with his goatee?
You saw how good the lava looks in Unreal 4. So
it looks baby sweet. Yeah,
it is some good looking lava in Unreal Engine 4. Well, so
you sure don't hear about that engine as much as you heard about Unreal Engine 3.
Yeah,
that's because there aren't any games on it yet. It's just
no,
it's
I
out,
know, but
not out.
the number of people that can afford to do it and that think that it's way better than Unity is way smaller than last generation was for Unreal Engine 3.
So it's got some level tools that I would prefer over Unity a million times. The level geometry stuff.
But I like. less Unreal Engine 4, more Unreal Engine 3. Not really. I don't agree with that, but it's funny.
Less Unreal Engine 4, more Gun Wheel Engine Score.
Yeah, that's great.
Less
UE 4, more. Oh man.
More Dewey. Whoa.
Dewey.
More Dewey. Dewey.
Dewey.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Dewey s'mores. S'mores video game. Dewey, 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 and Louie.
More gooey s'mores.
Video games need
more gooey s'mores.
Video games need less fiction and more friction.
More
that's
friction.
What I would say. That's what I would say. They need to have less of stuff talking and more of stuff chalking. More stuff kind of scraping. You know, I need more scraping in games. I need to be scraping when I'm in the air. I need to be scraping when I need more action games in general. You know what? I've recently decided, and I don't know if anybody else has recently decided this, that I don't really like the strategy games so much. You know? I mean, I'm way too smart for them. There you go. That's the end. That's all I have to say. So it's like I just want action games. I want action games that have strategy in them. Which is why Video Ball ultimately is everything. It has no fiction and, yes, friction. So that's all.
I like strategy games. I don't feel like being too smart for them is a problem in most cases, because it's like, are you okay with video games being work sometimes? And in my case, depending on the scenario and how the graphics look, I'm sometimes okay with video games being. And strategy games are a lot of that.
Less fiction, more friction.
Honk, honk.
That's all I've got to say about that entire topic.
I think that's the best we're going to do. All monsters who asked the question last week, but
that guy loves asking questions.
Yeah.
He's got some good for the hot seat. Over here.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah, he's gonna sit in it and then be like, oh my god,
warm here.
Yeah.
In this seat.
He asks, what are the most fun projectile catching mechanics?
Oh, projectile latching.
Lacrosse.
lacrosse kind of stuff. Let's face it.
Has there been like a really good lacrosse video game?
Oh man,
one on the Genesis.
I wouldn't necessarily say there was a really good one, but there was one that was quite popular, but also controversial, because it came out on Xbox Live Indie Games, and it used avatars and stuff, but they used some exploit things that they found, and they got certain communities to upvote their game so that they were consistently number one, and they were able to kind of fix their way into number one of the ratings, which was pretty much the only way to sort things at that time. So they wound up making like $1 million off of their lacrosse game through Xbox Live Indie Games being broken.
Oh yeah, wow. I remember that story. Mm-hmm. It was a good one to hang out while looking at on the internet.
Yeah. I don't know if this would count as a melee catching, but there's a 2600 game that's sort of a remake of Warlords. It's called, is it Medieval Mayhem, Brandon?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah, Medieval Mayhem. And if you guys have played Warlords, it's a game where you got paddles and four corners as four player. And you're bouncing a ball around trying to destroy each other's castles. But at least in that one, you hold down the button to catch the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's a really satisfying moment when you catch it and then fling it again. So yeah. I'm going to go with that. That's the closest video games have come to playing catch with dad.
I'm going to go ahead and say that one that's definitely not good is Yuji Naka and Prope's Let's Catch for the Nintendo Wii, which was a WiiWare title. Do you guys know this one?
No.
Where you play the part of a person playing catch with a little kid, and it's just they look like Miis, and you're just like throwing the ball, and then you have to like hold the Wiimote up at the right part of the screen and press the buttons together to catch, and it's really aggressively boring. It's like the sort of idea that I like, but it's really just kind of sad. And I guess isn't a catch, but in Sin and Punishment, and I know I probably have mentioned this a lot in my life now, but in Sin and Punishment, when you swing your sword to reflect a reflectable projectile or a reflectile at an enemy, there's that real vigorous, hard, gluey stop in the game where it's just a pause. It's a hit pause, but it feels like you've caught the object and you're about to throw it back. But I guess you're not catching it and holding on to it.
I want to say Zelda Twilight Princess did that when you're fighting Ganon also, but maybe it didn't have that. Like, maybe I'm confusing that pause catch thing with the other pause kill moments in Zelda.
Mm-hmm. There was a really good pause on Ganon in Zelda Ocarina of Time as well.
Yeah.
When you're reflecting his stuff.
Okay, yeah, so, I didn't play Ocarina of Time, so it's probably the same fight in Twilight Princess.
I enjoy catching bullets in Mars Matrix. That's fun to do. You absorb them and then release them. That's cool.
Is there anything where you catch things like with a vacuum? It'd be fun.
If ghosts are projectiles, then Luigi's Mansion.
No. Not even literally a vacuum, but something.
In Super Mario Brothers 2, or also known as Doki Doki Panic or Super Mario USA.
Oh wait. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Now you remember it.
Yeah.
So when you throw a vegetable at an enemy and it bounces very subtly off the top of the enemy and then it kills the enemy, and if you're running fast enough as Toad, you can throw him one vegetable, it bounces off the enemy, and then you can run through the enemy as the enemy begins to tumble off the foreground of the game, and you can catch the vegetable again. It's not really a bug in the game so much as it's this really kind of weirdly obscured technique, and I actually like that a lot. So you're catching projectiles you threw yourself.
One of the higher level techniques in the Super Smash Bros. Games is when someone throws an item at you, if you press the button at just the right moment, you can catch it and use it yourself. And that's one of the more fun things that kind of gets thrown out the window in those no items plainest stage matches.
So I have realized that probably my favorite is Windjammers.
Oh, WJ.
Oh,
there's
the answer. Because you're catching that projectile basically all the time, and then you're throwing it out there with different kinds of situations, and then the other person has to catch it, and that's the whole game, is catching a projectile and then releasing it. And so I think I really like that one.
That's a good one.
We haven't mentioned Pong or Arkanoid.
You're not catching them.
You don't catch it in either of those games, Jaffy.
So you can with a power-up in Arkanoid, though.
There's not a whole lot of these, or is it? Yeah, there's a catch
power-up
in Arkanoid. In the original Arkanoid, yeah.
All right.
And the cool Arkanoid for DS, do you have that one, Brandon?
Yeah.
That came with a little paddle. I really like that.
I have the paddle right now.
Yeah, I used to have that, but it got eaten. That's a really cool one to have. I know this probably doesn't count. But when I think of projectile catching, I like to think of Street Fighter II, when someone has thrown a fireball at you, and by some miracle of timing and strategy and position, you throw a fireball. Like, your only option is to throw a fireball to intercept their fireball because you don't want to jump. And then you throw a fireball to intercept their fireball just as it's about to hit you. That feels pretty good. I don't know if that's not really projectile catching, but
it's a real gameplay kind of count in Street Fighter 3.
I mean, you could say that parrying a fireball in Street Fighter 3 feels like that, but it's like it feels very much like you are catching their fireball and kind of just nullifying it, and also buying yourself an advantage if you're doing it like in these very rare situations.
Yeah.
So you know.
So the obvious example that came to my mind the first time you asked it, but I couldn't figure out if I liked it, was catching the ball in Super Dodgeball.
Yeah.
But it is, actually, I do like it when someone does, like, one of their weird, you know, super throws where the ball's all flashing, and you catch it, and as you catch it, your guy slides backwards because it's so strong. I like that. That's a good one.
One of my favorite projectile catches in video games is getting shot in the head in Gears of War immediately when you stand up from cover in some particularly difficult level designs, because you get to see your character who has beloved fiction attached to him just explode into like a million meat pieces. And that's kind of interesting.
Meatses.
And he just goes...
All right.
He makes this groaning, like, sound long after he's fallen into a bunch of pieces.
Ragdolling all over the place.
But yeah, I used to always sit around and think, I wish I had a game like Doom that was as fast and cool as Doom, where there were some projectiles that you want to hit you.
Yeah. You know?
So that's, you know, maybe you're in a multiplayer deathmatch, and if you shoot a special bullet, it will heal whoever it hits. I don't know. I'm going to stop talking before somebody makes $1 million.
Do that.
Yeah, because the thing I didn't mention was the ideas we have for that game that we wanted to make.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about that one. So.
I'm thinking about that my own self.
But before we get into last week's category of people stealing the cool ideas we come up with,
yes,
let's go into our next topic, which... funnily enough, addresses a game that we've already brought up. We're playing Custom Soundtrack, which is a segment where I tell you a game, and we rip out all the music, and you replace it with pre-existing music from bands and artists outside the realm of video games. This week's topic is Sin and Punishment.
Oh, S&P.
Pen and Punishment.
I would put a lot of Tchaikovsky in there. Because Tchaikovsky wrote some symphonies commemorating the sorts of eras that were celebrated in the original novel, Crime and Punishment, which, believe it or not, inspired the game Sin and Punishment's backstory.
Okay, well, if
that's
we're going
kind of
with
a joke. That's a
well,
joke.
Yeah, but it could still be. I mean, classical
you could
music
on it.
Can
you know,
be
you could
good.
Riff on
so I feel like I would like to have some boss battles that use operas from Henry Purcell, who is my favorite opera composer. Man, all of his stuff are... all of his songs are very... There's a lot of lamenting going on.
Oh, yeah, and you don't want to be happy about stuff in an opera.
Nah, heck of lamentations going on up in there, and that would probably be fun for a Sin and Punishment.
What do you think this is, an
battle.
Operetta?
Yeah. No.
No, he doesn't think
it
that.
Is not.
I don't think that.
No. Frank,
it's the real deal.
Frank, what would you put in Sin and Punishment?
Probably the Muppet Babies theme song.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I mean, to be fair, I take out the lyrics. You know, I wouldn't do that. I mean, like, Muppet Babies will make your dreams come true. That doesn't actually make sense with Sin and Punishment, but the underlying song, I think, would fit really well. I didn't actually have an answer, but you put me on the spot.
Sin and Punishment is such a good game.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I guess I would maybe... So if I were not putting symphonic music there, though I do think it's a good idea, I would put in some... I guess like Detroit techno, like Drexia, or some like early '90s electro, Grandmaster Flash, and God darn all those guys that are in my records that are too far to see right now. I'm going to go over to where my records are, and then I'm going to tell you some names while somebody else says stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know this is primarily what, like, my favorite type of music to have listened to for the last couple of years, but I like Japanese minimalist psychedelic guitar music from the 1990s, and I actually think it would fit Sin and Punishment, because it already has a... The music that's in there, I guess we're not technically supposed to really talk about the music that's in there. I don't feel like the music that's in Sin and Punishment fits the game or is really that good. I would fill Sin and Punishment with... So I actually have played Sin and Punishment Star Successor on the Wii while listening to Yura Yura Te Koku's 2008 remix album. And that was a really good time. So just listening to some of their weird, bizarre remixes. So I would put, because it's all just kind of heavy, melodic, but dark stuff with kind of a lot of guitars and just a whole lot of layers. It's minimalist, but with a bunch of layers. It's hard to explain, but it's tasty stuff for me. I don't know about everybody else, but I like this kind of weird, spacey, everything on that album sounds like a final boss in a video game.
Yeah, I like, do not really... I've mentioned this before, but I don't really like guitars in video games very much.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying this. Their remix album doesn't really have guitars on it. So, have you heard that album, Brandon? You should listen to it. You might like it. I got it over here, and I have it in my car, and I drive around with it, just kind of pretending to be smoking weed because I'm not cool enough to actually smoke weed. But mostly music that would sound good, just good, spacey, weird electronic music with hard drums in it. I want drums, like real drums. So I'm just thinking I would like to play Sin and Punishment with electronic music that's got drums in it.
So I actually think that Tchaikovsky and other ballet composers would be pretty good at making video game stuff.
Probably. Did you see that movie, The Black Swan? Terrible movie.
Hated it.
But there's a part near the end where they're doing a ballet. As they call it in England. That's a joke. I'm not going to explain that joke. Where they're doing the ballet, and they're playing the music, which is by T. Tchaikovsky, right?
Yeah.
T. Tchaikovsky. And
Tchaikovsky.
So they're playing that ballet, and there's an electric bass guitar just kind of subtly in there. And I remember hearing that and being like, that's pretty cool. It's too bad about all the suck in the movie, but there was the cool electric bass guitar in there, and I was like, it'd be cool to just hear some of this with, like, really tasteful kind of just drums kind of just, like, pumped in there. So that's what I want. I want T. Tchaikovsky with some drums.
All right.
And, none of that Nutcracker, though. God darn it.
No, that's okay. From Nut Noobs. Just to finish my journey over to my record collection, Cybertron, Drexia, Total Eclipse, and everything that's on this compilation right here that's called Modular Sound Innovations.
Sound Innovations.
Those are the things that I would put on if not some classicals.
I would just stuff the whole Yura Yura Te Koku remix 2005-2008 album in there.
So concludes this week's custom soundtrack segment.
Huh. Again, I've actually listened to that album over and over again while playing Sin and Punishment 2 over and over again because it just felt like the right music to put on. So there's that. And also I would punch up the bullet sounds in Sin and Punishment. They're so flaky.
All right.
I mean they're really dull and really lifeless in the game, and it makes me sad, so the end.
Yeah, we gotta polish those up, but custom sound effects design is a different.
They need to get a pencil sharpener over there at Treasure. They need to pencil sharpen those gunshots.
Yeah.
If video game characters were eligible for the Olympics, who would represent which countries?
Mario would represent the United States. Sonic the Hedgehog would represent Japan. And I would think Dr. Robotnik would be Belgium.
Yes.
Yeah. Mario's not Italy?
Mario's from Brooklyn, man.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
I thought he was an immigrant.
He's from Brooklyn. Okay, so Ryu would be Japan.
Yeah, it would be all the Street Fighter cast.
Yeah.
Okay, let's put a moratorium. Let's put a kibosh on Street Fighter right now. No more Street Fighter.
You know what? I'll say one Street Fighter character.
What?
Okay, then Blanca for Brazil.
No. Okay, there you go. Blanca for Brazil.
Yeah. Now, who was yours going to be, Jaffe?
No,
I bet you had a gun for it.
I didn't have one. I was saying I would allow you to pick one Street Fighter.
I thought you had a tasty pun lined up. A TPL.
Not yet. Wait for it.
I would say Toad is French. Do you guys think Toad is French?
I
think he's Swedish.
I think he's French Canadian.
French Canadian.
Yeah, he's not just French. He's from Canada.
He's from Montreal. You think?
Yeah, Montreal. Yeah.
Yeah, he's from the real mountain.
Yeah, it actually means the Royal Mountain.
All right, so Capcom. Where did
Crapcom?
Toad is representing Canada.
Toad is representing Capcom.
I feel like Mega Man X would represent China.
Nintendo.
For some reason. I feel like Mega Man X is from China, but Mega Man is from Japan.
China probably bootlegged Mega Man X games a lot, so that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, he seems
so it's a bootleg Mega Man X.
I mean, no offense to fans of Mega Man X, but Mega Man X, the character, looks like the Chinese knockoff of Mega Man. Where it's just trying to be, like, edgier and has a bunch of extra stuff kind of taped to him. So that's my conclusion there.
I think that Huarong fellow from Tekken would represent Korea because...
Oh, come on.
No, I know that he's a character from Korea in a fighting game, but they actually really like that guy there, and
they love that guy.
They like being nationalistic about things, and so does that character, and so I feel like it's actually appropriate.
They also like Huang from Soul Calibur. Huang Sung-kyung. Yeah. That guy, they love that guy.
So I'm thinking about the beloved Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah.
I'm thinking how they're beloved because, he's in Street Fighter. So I'm thinking, they're known for being hot there. So I think representing Jamaica will be the Sun from Super Mario Brothers 3.
No, I'm going to say representing Jamaica will be Funky Kong from the Donkey Kong Country series.
Mm. Yeah, that's it.
All right, I'm going.
Cranky Kong should represent Scotland, because I feel like Cranky Kong is Scottish. Hey Frank, you know what we should do is we should get that Donkey Kong Country game for the Wii U and we should stream that.
Sure.
I think
it's actually really good.
I think Toadjam and Earl can represent England.
Yeah.
Yeah. So England's Olympic team is looking a little weird. Whole lot of stuff that doesn't look like stuff, just kind of hanging out. Like there's Block, and there's beloved Paperclip from Amiga game number 69,000.
Jet Set Willy is probably on there, whatever he is.
There's that jetpack guy. There's Solar Jetman. Solar Jetman seems like he would be good for a bobsled team. The England bobsled team.
Yeah.
So I really think Block and Solar Jetman would be on the England bobsled team.
Wait, rather than Toad, wouldn't Canada's guy be Mass Effect guy?
No, he's not sorry enough.
Yeah, because it's a Canadian company, isn't it?
Yeah, but we're trying to...
We're just trying to match personalities.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's get stereotypical.
That's what we're trying to do.
I mean, I guess we're being sort of British about the British people. But who did I say would be from Scotland? I don't even remember. Cranky Kong.
Cranky Kong.
Now, I realize Rare is from the south of England, so they're not. That's not Scotland. But Cranky Kong just to me seems like Scotland, you know? He has a Scottish atmosphere about him.
But Rockstar is legitimately Scotland.
Yeah, I don't care about those guys, though.
I don't either.
I'm not interested in humanoid characters either. I'm only interested in the weird ones, you know, the
Well, is the that one is he better than Scrooge McDuck for Scotland?
No. Yeah. Also Scrooge McDuck, I can't qualify him as a video game character.
Yeah.
Cuz he was in that Way Forward game and I don't like that Way Forward game.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Not my cup of coffee there.
I'm trying to figure out who Kirby would be.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that too.
Kirby could be French. Let's go ahead and say Starfy is French, since I've only ever heard of a French people liking Starfy.
Sure.
Is that good?
Sounds good. Yeah.
So where's Toad? Is he still French Canadian?
Yeah, he's French Canadian. Who's Germany?
German.
The ship from God darn it. Why can't I remember the name? That game that starts with a T that's on the Genesis where it's all fiddly to control and it's
Zero Wing? Terra Cresta?
No.
So you said ship, and before you said ship, immediately, what my immediate answer was going to be, who's the German Olympic team? I was going to say Jaws from Jaws for NES. I don't know why he's on the German Olympic swimming team.
Yeah,
and that guy's gonna win. He's gonna all win of all of it.
Hey, I've got
he's,
good
he's
news.
Gonna
everybody.
Win that. What?
People have been clamoring for it, and I know you've been missing it a whole lot. So here is the triumphant return of everybody's favorite segment.
So when you say people, I think you mean just one person, and the other people all hate it.
Oh, yeah. I do mean just one person, and that just one person is in this room. ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the latest edition of The Improv Zone.
You know, there is something cathartic about watching really bad improv that is actually entertaining. It genuinely is.
I haven't found that. Because I've been to quite a bit of bad improv.
Yeah, it just feels sad.
The thing is, you've been to bad improv probably with participants who are serious about it. And that's bad. That's really bad.
Here you go with this, yeah.
Think of how many YouTube videos there are where it's just, look at my kid playing with his toys, you know? It's like, there you go. That's what this is like. It's that level of entertainment.
Are you guys ready for the prompt?
No.
Oh, yeah, prompt me, baby.
Too bad.
Prompt me.
You are a cultural liaison to an alien race we've recently made contact with, represented by Frank and Brandon.
I'll be a part of this world.
Yeah. They've discovered our hundreds of video games dedicated to blowing up aliens, and they have some questions.
Yeah. They have some questions.
So listen.
So aliens have called you for a meeting.
Earth representative, I'm glad that you're here. We have a lot of questions about your propaganda that you have been indoctrinating your people with. One of our concerns is that some of these aliens, well, some of them look like our enemies, which is excellent. We do approve of destroying them.
Yes.
Some of them look a little bit like us, and we're just wondering where you're coming from on that. Is that, like, ironic or something? I don't even know if we understand what irony is, frankly, because I'm an alien.
I showed that Galaga to Gleep Glorp, and he would not stop crying. But I'm sorry, I'm getting out of myself.
Well, so, Aliens Colonial Marines is actually based on a series of movies. And, those movies are made by a guy named. First one was made by a guy named Ridley Scott back in 1979, and
we've heard of this one.
They had no idea what aliens would look like. They were actually basing that alien on. There was an artist who was doing it, but it was like cockroaches and scorpions, animals that we have on Earth, and people are genuinely afraid of these animals that we have on our planet, like these really gross insect animals. So we did not realize that there would be intelligent beings in the universe that looked like that. And I'm sorry, you know, you guys look like that, but you're pretty cool, you know?
Thanks.
I don't know why you've got two mouths, but we weren't, that wasn't us being hateful. It was just
we're double hungry.
We were for feeding.
Do you not feed
your two stomachs? Do you feed only one stomach?
Does one of those mouths eat vegetables and one of those mouths eat meat, or what? I don't understand. But we can talk about that later when we get
just kind of cycle it through. But actually, I'm glad that you brought up the fellow who did all the reference for that cinematic picture there, because mm-hmm. we did in fact put him here on Earth as our liaison, you know, earlier or before we arrived. We put him here, and nobody really took him very seriously. We had him take your form, but he didn't. Like he couldn't really spread the news, the good word, unless he did it through some sort of mass medium, and that's how I guess that movie Aliens came about. But then you took those aliens and you decided to shoot them and make them the bad guys, which is not what
wait
we were
wait a minute.
That's what we're wondering. Where did that step in the process come?
Well, I don't know. I think you have an issue with Ridley Scott. Why did he put what was he expecting? You guys need to learn a thing or two about writing a story. Were the American people here in the United Planet of America, were they supposed to watch that movie and come away at the end going, you know, that alien was pretty nice? Or were they supposed to? Because
the alien just had to propagate the species. We gotta impregnate the cat.
The alien is fulfilling its function. Come on,
and then why didn't it explode out of there?
We allow you to fulfill your function.
Why didn't it talk? Why? I mean, you guys can talk. Why wasn't the alien like talking and explaining itself? Why was it just being dark and evil?
That was just one of our workers.
He was a ZF model. Come on.
You guys should have been careful who you picked to represent yourself.
I guess. But you know, even so, a little understanding, less a little more understanding, a little less shooting.
Yeah.
Would have been nice.
A little more understanding, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just like fiction here on this planet. We like to make stuff up, and people like seeing stuff blow up because they're afraid of it. They're afraid of dying. People are afraid of getting blown up.
Now why are we discussing this work of non-interactive fiction when clearly our research shows that interactive fiction is what causes violence among our people? So let's steer this back on track. Let's not blame the cinema movie. Let's go back to these video games that are just started to be beamed up to us.
Like which one? Tell me one.
I had mentioned Gleepglorp's version to Galaga.
Yes.
And I don't understand why this ship has bullets and the Galagans do not. Is this some kind of... Explain this.
Well, some sort of extermination.
For one thing, you should see it as a token of respect that if, in fact, these animals, these creatures, these objects in the game Galaga are aliens, we are respecting their ability to murder without the need for something so crude as a gun. They can kill with just their touch. They're psychic. They're above and beyond us. But the game Galaga, to my knowledge, does not nominate its opponents as an alien race. They're just... Right, they're just the Galaxians. They're just who knows what they are. We don't, you know. That was a fiction made up by some people in Japan who, you know,
we've heard of this Japan.
We don't know who any of those people are.
But it's not just Japan's fault because there's also this Toe Jam and Earl game, which we find very insulting.
Now hold it right there! I am the democratically elected leader of the Zombie Coalition, and we need answers! And scene.
Oh yeah.
I think that was our most boring one ever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's all right.
Good job, Kevin.
I think we really did it.
I think that's an A++ job over there.
I disagree. But
this might be our greatest episode of all time.
It could have been pretty good. It's hard to tell how entertaining something is when you're actually... Oh, no. I was scrolling down my Facebook just now, and there was a picture of Game of Thrones, and I didn't want to see that.
Oh, no.
Oh, doctors.
Hey, guys.
What
would you imagine must have been the single most unpleasant console video game to work on?
Oh, my God. Anything on Jaguar?
Well, maybe, but...
Nah. Although, I think probably working on Trevor McFerrin Crescent Galaxy was pretty disheartening because like they were making that game and it wasn't supposed to be a launch title, and for Jaguar we're talking about, and then they needed to push up the launch of their console because the PlayStation and Saturn were happening. And so they were like, okay, you're a launch title now, and also you're done. And they're like, wait, we didn't figure out how to put music in the game yet. And they're like, that's fine. So you just have to, they just had to flop out this partially finished game that is really not done. And have that be a launch title.
But that said, like in theory, when they were working on it, they weren't having a bad time. The question is, what was the hardest one to work on?
Well, I kind of actually think something. So Trevor McFerr was what I was came like popped immediately into my mind because it's no kidding, because it's like where was the inspiration in this? Like it's like we got a furry fox character and some other furry animals, and it's like it's obviously they're just looking at Star Fox and make something like that, and they don't have the. I mean, it took real balls and ingenuity and creativity and technical prowess and all that to make Star Fox, and there were some creative, cool people working on it. And then it's like they're just like we can't just make something as good as that like right now, and then. I don't know, that just feels miserable. So I want to say that the obvious answer that somebody would probably think of watching, I'm thinking about the audience now, is something like Bioshock Infinite, where the game is just loaded with art and the story is changing all the time, but where it's like, what is this game about? You know, who is this? Huge. What is the game system?
Well, like Final Fantasy 13 would be the one like that I would choose. Because that was a game where they actually didn't know what the game was for the first 2 years, and they were like, we've got to keep making assets.
Okay, but every example we've had so far, there's at least some creativity in it.
No, what I wanted to say was that Bioshock and Final Fantasy must have been just fantastically fun to work on for the artists and animators and stuff, because they're just like, if you play Bioshock Infinite for an hour, it's like, oh my god, they had a lot of fun, and they were really, really creative putting this game together. And it's a nightmare for project managers and game designers, but not for most of the employees. So that's the end of my...
So thing. I would think, I'm thinking ports. I'm thinking porting a game you don't like. It's probably pretty miserable.
Actually, porting games in the old feature phone days, porting a bunch of games to the Razer and the various other things, that is probably extremely miserable. So I think you might be onto something.
I was thinking like arcade games to the ZX Spectrum or something.
Well, the old ZX.
Yeah, but that's kind of a fun feat of ingenuity, like getting that down to there. I think just where all the work you're doing is, okay, we've got to change the screen resolution, and now we've got to do this other thing, and now we've got to make sure that the sound effects fit in RAM, so we got to squish those down. That seems to me like... Hey, Jaffy, do you have some sort of like whispering bird going on over there?
I'm a little sick.
Whispering bird, I think, is actually what we call that, Jaffy. Yeah. You're a whispering bird.
Because there's just all kinds of sounds coming from you over there that I don't think you're making.
All right.
I think you got a whispering bird.
You got a whispering bird over there.
And I think you're going to die because of it. So look out.
Okay.
Yep.
Console games, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was console games, so it can't be...
Oh, it can't be Spectrum.
It can't be it can't be those goddamn phone games either.
Yeah.
But still, I'm still leaning toward someone having to port by themselves with no time or money a game that they don't like would probably be the most miserable possible experience.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know exactly what that would be.
I feel like it depends on, so to some extent it depends on the person. So for me, let's say I was working on DuckTales in some capacity where I couldn't control anything, the new DuckTales remake for Way Forward. That would be super miserable for me.
I would have shot myself. With a DuckTales gun. With a gun full of DuckTales.
Yep. Right in the face zone. So yeah, that kind of stuff. I kind of wonder what the experience is like making those super crappy, or was like making those super crappy Euro PS2 games that Frank and I have played a whole bunch of.
I kind of imagine that they're just kind of drinking beer and pooping them out.
Yeah, they're just going like, there's a car and it goes, ship it.
Yeah.
Like London Cab.
Yeah. Like, I don't think they had a bad time making that. They're like, good enough, mate.
There was no collision on the buildings and stuff.
It doesn't crash very often. Ship it.
I was looking at some videos of that Killer is Dead game, and I was thinking about working on Shadows of the Darned, and because I worked on the game Shadows of the Darned for 4 years, and it wasn't very good. That was not a fun experience, and neither was I assumed that Killer is Dead game was worse. There was an interview with Shinji Mikami recently on Polygon, and I read it, and I was reading through it, because I'm like, I know this guy, right? Because, I mean, we all know Shinji Mikami, right?
Oh, yeah. Shinji, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's the Shinji. So I was reading this interview, and I did not expect him to even talk about it for more than a sentence, but it was like, yeah, so then we were working on Shadows of the Darned with EA, and it was horrible. It was a terrible experience. It was the worst experience of my game development life. And I'm like, heck yeah, Shinji Mikami got real about it. So there you go. Nobody was excited about working on Shadows of the Darned while that game was getting made. It was there was no idea what the game was. The artists were asked to change everything, like every week. I'm going to go ahead and say that, to my knowledge, with the testimonial agreement of Shinji Mikami, that Shadows of the Darned was the most obnoxiously, stupidly, horribly boring game to work on. And it's, Also, so in other words,
thing that popped into my...
EA. I bet Dead Space 1 was probably the worst, most boring, horrible game to work on.
I don't agree with that at all.
I met they flew the Dead Space team over to talk to us about what a vertical slice was. And those guys looked so dead. They gave us like a 20-minute presentation on their game, and I was like, oh, so, you know, what was the idea here? And they're just like, man, I don't know, man. Is what the guy said to me. I'm not going to name names, but he's just like, man, I don't know. I don't know, man. I'm like, so is this game cool? He's like, I don't know, man. And that was like the whole, this like 8-hour long fun day we had with the Dead Space guys. It's like, I don't know, man. That was the whole, it's like, oh, so how'd you guys get the idea that you shoot the enemy's limbs off to kill them? I don't know. It's like, well, EA, you know, the EA partners was like, well, there's got to be innovation. Innovation was one of the core. I mean, they had a guy come in like Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glenn Ross with his attention, interest, decision, action, and his eye was was innovation. It's got to be something new about the game. So the innovation of Dead Space is you don't shoot the enemy in the head to kill him anymore. You shoot them in the arm. Like, that's not even a joke. That's the level of thing you're working with when you talk. The idea was producing your studio.
They got the idea working on the game that all of them kind of occurred to them at once. What if you could shoot yourself in the head and get the catharsis of that, but not die?
Yeah.
So yeah. That's where that mechanic came from. Here's our next question. Adventure Time.
Are Frank and Brandon both looking at their phones right now? What is going on here? Mm-hmm. What are you guys doing? Just looking at your phone.
Yeah.
I love phones.
I'm listening to the next question.
Here's the next question.
Let's hear it. Let's get right on with it.
Adventure Time creator Pendleton Ward is sitting down with Double Fine to make some games right now.
That's true. Yeah.
Which living creative personalities outside the periphery of video games would you draft into the production of a title?
Okay, so one thing I just want to mention first off is that I really want to make one of those games that Pendleton Ward came up with.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's called Damn It, Jerry.
And, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, I saw that one.
Yeah, I really want to make that. It's a game about a world where there's a king who loves human pyramids, and the only rule of the human pyramid, aside from that you should always make them, is that Jerry has to be on top. And Jerry's a big fat guy who's not very coordinated. And so he's trying to climb to the top of this human pyramid, and there are people in the pyramid that are, like, distracting him. Like, his mom is there telling him that he needs to lose weight, or someone needs their shoe tied, and he's like, oh, I should help. And the pyramid gets all jiggly and wobbly and falls over and stuff. And then at the end, no matter what, the king, who's a giant, puts Jerry on his knee and is like, good job, Jerry. I really want to play that game and also make that game. But anyway.
I think that guy could probably make a whole bunch of cool video games, so I guess that's why they're making a whole bunch of those.
I think he almost definitely...
Ben Burbank, our good friend, Ben Burbank.
Yeah, he's working right on one of those right now.
Yeah, he's working on Little Pink Best Buds is the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
A land full of little guys who all want to just be your best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, he described it to me as Project Milo times 12.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to get Ben Burbank on here someday.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. So, actually, speaking of that, so here's someone that I would be interested in working in who has, as far as I can tell, never made a video game before. Peter Molyneux. I think that would be pretty good.
You'd have to get a bunch of really smart game designers to turn his ideas into game designs.
It's true.
That was a good joke because he calls himself a game designer.
Yeah. We just had a whole bunch of just fun lols right there. Fun.
Sure
I would like to get the this is going to sound like a troll, but it's not. I would really like a video game made by Hayao Miyazaki. And he has...
Oh, The Miz.
Maybe only because for the last 30 years or so, he has vocally disliked and hated on video games as a medium.
Yeah.
Right? He's just always hated on them. And then there was that Ni No Kuni game, which he didn't have anything to do with, but some of the other guys at Studio Ghibli did. And everybody was like, man, the graphics, Ni No Kuni, you're so awesome, just on Kotaku. They're like, this game rules, dude. And then, I got the game, and I played the beginning of it, and then there's a cutscene that's actually animated by Studio Ghibli, and it looks so much better than the graphics of the game. There's, like, real art in it, and it's like, man, this game is not made by anybody as cool as Hayao Miyazaki, because this art that's in the game is so much better. I really, really want a video game by Hayao Miyazaki. I really think he would do it right. Like a Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind video game that's kind of an action game, and it's just set in that world, and he's designing the levels. I think he would have a really good idea of level design. You know,
I would, on that same topic, I don't know if I have anyone specific, but I always was a fan of video game ideas that made it into video games that were by people who weren't video game makers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it never came out, but there's a lot of weird little touches in that Penn & Teller Smoke & Mirrors game, including, you know, Desert Bus, which is, like, super famous, that are only in there because, like, they didn't know any better. You know, you know, they're like, well, what if it's just a bunch of weird magic tricks you play on people with the TV, and it's, and it's just weird, fascinating looks into people who aren't video game designers, but, you know, who are listened to anyway. What's that Famicom game by...
Beat Takeshi's Castle?
Choshenjo? Yeah, I mean, that's the same sort of situation, right? Or, like, okay, or Earthbound, one of my favorite games.
Earthbound is the best example of this, yeah.
Yeah, of someone who doesn't have a video game background, but is coming in to make a game and just made something completely brilliant that people are still talking about.
Something that is unparalleled in how good it is in its entire medium and in other mediums as well. It's just a fantastic thing.
I would say, I really like video game kinds of things that come from... Well, I feel like I would like video game things that would come from people that do physical art, like installations and bronzes and things, and people that work with space, but I don't have... I guess there's that James Turrell guy. I don't have a very specific idea, but... Oh, man, okay, wait, no, I have two things now. One is Akira Toriyama, which is pretty easy. He's the Dragon Ball guy, and he's really good at telling a fun story, and I think he would make a cool world.
Is he outside the periphery of video games, though?
He's worked on...
Never been hands-on. He's only just box art, right?
He does character designs, but that's...
I mean, if you read the Dragon Ball manga... You can tell that guy has a sense of game design because there's rules in his battle system. He actually developed a battle system for his story.
And he's really good at creating a universe and a world. And then the other one that I would say is, unfortunately, he is dead, but Jim Henson.
I was going to say Mobius, who is also dead.
Oh, man, Mobius, yeah. Mobius.
I have seen the movie The Fifth Element about 200 times in my life, and man,
I got to get one on Blu-ray.
Oh, it's a good-looking Blu-ray. I got it. Man, it's so good. It's so good to just sit and watch that movie and just look at the stuff. It's like...
Yeah.
And then if you look at enough of his art and his paintings, as I certainly have, you start to think again. And, I mean, this is just a thing, you know? This is just like... it's like Michael Jordan played minor league baseball for just a couple of months, but according to his coaches, he would have been a great baseball player if there hadn't been the MLB lockout, you know? Like, it just carries over. Skill carries over, and I do believe that a guy as talented at art as Mobius was could have been a great 3D shooting game level designer.
Yeah,
I think he could have come up with level design ideas that were
I would have walked around in a world that guy made, for sure.
Heck to the yeah.
I don't have a specific example in mind, but I would like a great cinematographer to design a video game.
Yeah, architects, cinematographers, photographers, just people who have actual craft. There's a lot of people who have bumbled into making video games, and I mean, no offense to the video game industry, but it's something a whole bunch of people bumbled down into, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean... Most of the good stuff video games has occurred by accident.
I mean, I bumbled into this, you know? Like, I mean, it's exactly true.
I feel like I bumbled in.
Yeah, I would say I did.
We're all bumblers here.
Video games are still new enough that it's just only recently become kind of a concrete discipline.
I feel like Cliffy B didn't bumble.
No.
I'm trying to think of people who didn't bumble into it.
Eric Chahi didn't bumble into it. Eric Chahi basically did come from outside the video game industry.
Exactly, exactly. And he made one of the best, most beautiful video games of all time. So, all
right.
There's that.
Eric Chahi.
Yeah, there's just so many people that I would like to see contribute to a game. I'd like to see Martin Scorsese contribute to a game. Because watching Boardwalk Empire and just seeing the way the camera moves, again, I get the impression this guy could probably do something with 3D video game level design that would blow everyone's mind. There's so much stuff about 3D action game level design that no one has ever tried.
And, I think I have the answer, which is the director of Citizen Kane.
Because
then finally
the Citizen Kane. Yeah.
Do you mean the Japanese version, Citizen Kane?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's a movie about money.
Director Spike Jonze does a pretty good job of like establishing the rules of something and then playing with it. So be an interesting guy to work on games.
Tim, I think you accidentally discovered the title of Kanye West's next album.
Citizen Kanye?
Yeah.
He's probably going to do that. I think it's too obvious for him.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's too obvious.
The internet cried out in horror today when one Nintendo investor suggested adding microtransactions to their titles.
Oh,
would
no.
Would this really be such a bad idea?
That's a terrible idea.
It is.
Like pay a dollar to make Mario jump higher?
That specific example's a bad idea.
Well, I don't think
a terrible idea.
I don't think... Yeah. I think Nintendo could know how to do that, but they definitely don't know how to do it now, and their baby steps would make everyone feel terrible. And also... Yeah. It's just so against what their company is about, basically. Except, I mean, I guess they did, they sort of do that when you can buy those little tiny extra games for your street passes and stuff.
Yeah.
When I felt like those kind of should have been free, because those are their kind of viral marketing deal. But oh, I don't know. I think it would be, yes, a really bad idea for Nintendo. It's not a bad idea for everyone, but it's a bad idea for making a cool Fun Times video game most of the time. Like, I actually play a lot of free-to-play games, and I sometimes pay for them when I think the game is really good. But Nintendo is just not going to come at it. They're not going to want to come at it from that direction, I don't think. But they are a business, primarily. They want to make money, so I don't know.
I mean, they can do it for some of their games. Like, I feel like Animal Crossing is already a free-to-play game that doesn't realize it is.
Yeah.
And I feel like they could adjust some of their games to be a free-to-play game, but I don't think that they'd make very many games that would adapt well to that. You couldn't do that to a Mario. You know, you couldn't introduce like all the Mario games. You know, for whether or not you like them, they are very finely crafted, and if you add the wild card into what's there, you just break the whole game.
I will say that, like, in the case of power-ups and things, they could get away with letting you pay to start a level with a power-up and not break the game that they have. But I think it's gross. They could do it, though. They could do that.
I don't know. You start to do that, and then it's a really slippery slope.
Indeed.
Like, really, really fast, because then you start to design levels that are slightly harder, and you start to limit the power-ups a tiny bit. To put a squeeze on it. And then it's like, if you're going to put a feature in there, such as monetized power-ups, you're going to want to start to fine-tune that and incentivize that. And it just falls apart.
So something that someone did, I think on the Ouya, was for one of their emulators, it's free, but you can buy rewind time. So like, if you die in Mega Man, you could sort of hold L to rewind time and get him back, you know, where he was, but like you got a meter that's going down, and you pay to refill it. And I like that, because clearly these games were not designed with that in mind. But like, if you want to play it that way, fine. You know, that's on you to cheat yourself out of that. And I like microtransactions that are like that. But you know, I don't trust that Nintendo or anyone will not go down the slippery slope that Tim mentioned, you know, but for games that already exist and were done and shipped and already, you know, fine-tuned and everything, I don't mind a cheat layer on top of it.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like some kind of old Japanese RPG, if you could, you know, if you could pay for a coin doubler in Final Fantasy IV or whatever. I don't think that's a bad idea. Not that that's a Nintendo game.
I mean, they had that Super Mario, New Super Mario Brothers 2 for the 3DS, where it's like, try to get a million coins and play all these little levels. Man, I think if they're going to do microtransactions, what I would do, I would pay $1 a month to just have a new Super Mario 3D World level on my Nintendo Wii U, you know? Like, just a new set of missions, or like, do this Spelunky daily challenge thing. It's like, Nintendo makes, whether, again, like them or not, and there's plenty of stuff I hate about Nintendo's stuff, you know, don't get me wrong, DGMW, but like, they really just make a holistically crafted thing. You know, I would pay $5 right now for a new Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds dungeon, you know? I would pay $5 right now for a new world or a new level in Super Mario 3D World. You know, like, just because their games just feel good and look good, and they've got people who understand level design over there. And I think, and nobody, like, people don't even use the word level design when they're talking about the business element of games. And it's like, that is what you're going to be selling. You know, the level design is the episode, you know, the episode of a TV show is the level design of a video game. And, I think that's what Nintendo should sell. They should make a Super Mario where you get new levels. Because you know why you play Super Mario? Because you like it. That's why you play it. You don't play it because you want to see what happens to Princess Peach and Bowser. You play it because you want to have a good time with the levels. And that's what Nintendo could sell. And being like, oh, pay a dollar to make your jump higher. Like, if that's the kind of advice they're fielding from people who have put millions of dollars into their company, then it's all psychos all the way down, and let's all die.
Well, luckily, Nintendo has a history of ignoring their shareholders completely, so I think we're okay.
So as not a shareholder, maybe they'll listen to me when I say, sell level designs.
And it's not unheard of for them, because they had those e-cards for the Game Boy Advance games where you could buy new Mario levels on a card you would scan. So it's kind of weird that they never transitioned that into a digital thing.
Yeah, they need that $50... Cool. They need that $50 Android-based handheld console that would allow them to just kind of sell these things a lot more quickly. Like popcorn, man. They talked about being like a. They talked about being like a like McDonald's with the Wii, you know, selling little things. They need to start thinking movie theater popcorn money. Movie theater popcorn money. MTPM. MTPM. Movie theater popcorn money. That's what you want.
Here's your next challenge.
Okay, what?
I'm going to need you guys to remake the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory so that it's about a mysterious but successful video game company, its eccentric president, and five lucky contest winners who perish one by one until the last remaining child inherits ownership.
Okay, Shigeru Miyamoto is the guy.
Yes.
Oh, man, I was thinking Rockstar, because that sounds like something that would actually happen there to me. Because they are mysterious, and they don't talk to people, and they like.
But they're not magic.
Rockstar is really magic. Boring. I bet like just going into Rockstar is just like really atrociously boring. I bet everybody there is just kind of like, yeah.
I feel like I would probably get assassinated if I said the things that I actually know about what it's like to work at Rockstar. But it's.
I know some things.
It's not boring. It's more like
horrifying,
extremely stressful, and everyone—not everyone, but let's say a lot of the people, especially higher up in the company, do a lot of a certain kind of substance that can make you even more stressed out. So, yeah,
yeah,
and that's a bit of magic.
So, Willy Wonka. What we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
WW, as I call him, right?
And it's fictional, and I think the only company with any kind of mystique anymore is Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to their building. Me and Bob stood outside of it and did push-ups once.
I've been to both of their buildings.
Oh, man. Oh,
did you go to both?
The Tokyo one and the Kyoto one? I've been outside the Tokyo one.
No, I meant both the ones in Kyoto,
the
office and the Hanafuda office.
Oh, I went to both of them. We went to both of them. They were cool. So it's like, what goes on in there? I bet you there's cool stuff. Is there no documentary footage at all of Zelda, of 3D Zelda levels being made? I don't think there is.
No.
I bet that's a cool process. I bet I bet they've got some water slides in there or whatever.
Well,
you know?
if we're talking about reality, there are photos within Nintendo, and they're all very boring looking. Like Nintendo's
Not. No, okay.
Yes, there are. And they're just, you know, desks and cubes and white walls with no decorations for, you know, America and Japan. But again, this is fiction, right? And to me, like the Willy Wonka, the chocolate factory of video games is Nintendo. So I agree with that. I want to see Miyamoto in a funny hat and suit. So sure. He's our Willy Wonka.
And he has a banjo. Don't forget he's wielding a banjo.
Yes, he's got it on his back.
And a garden hoe.
I feel like Reggie is more of a natural Willy Wonka, but I think we want to see Miyamoto in the role.
Yeah, yes. except with Willy, with Reggie, the word Wonka is more of like a sound that he makes when he wakes up in the morning. Oh, yes! Shut it down. That was the top of the pop right there. That was as good as it gets.
Need to recover from that.
Wonka!
So kids win golden tickets from buying games, I guess, right? Buying 3DS games. So there's all right, the five of them are gonna die.
Wait, okay. I think how they're gonna die is that Nintendo has a new game that boasts the most accurate player AI.
The most.
And in fact, the AI is coming from absorbing the children's souls.
The AI is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, the AI is coming from.
Well, that's how one of the kids dies. They all gotta die in different ways.
Why?
And it has to be their fault. Because that's Willy Wonka.
I thought two people fell in vats of things.
Yeah, but it was their fault.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that those are the same way. No, well, it's their fault for liking Nintendo.
I have the solution here. In modern Nintendo game tradition, the kids all die because they're bumping into each other because they can't occupy the same space, and they just knock each other into pits. So within the first 3 seconds of the tour, they just like all of them fall into a meat grinder, except for the one kid. Except for the one kid who
who's crying, but now owns Nintendo.
No, the one kid whose Wiimote battery was dead, so he wasn't able to move at the beginning of the level. That's how all the kids die.
He's the Luigi of the Mario Party.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a reference to how every Nintendo game nowadays is about cramming in 4-player support to a game that really does not deserve it. And then you just bump everybody off into a bottomless pit, and you're yelling at each other. Except in this tour, they would all just be dead.
What's the reason that they have the meat grinders under the floor? There's got to be a business reason for that.
To feed Miyamoto.
Ah. No, to feed Reggie.
Yeah, to feed Reggie.
Wonka.
Like normally, kind of throw cows down there.
So it they get in, and it's like, this is our obstacle training course that every employee has to go through at the beginning of the day. They have to get through this obstacle course, and if they fall in, they become food for Reggie. And Nintendo is always hiring.
Can I end the segment by telling a Nintendo story I've never told on this podcast
before? Okay, let's hear it, baby.
A long time ago, I liked this girl who
was
a Zelda fan, and she pronounced the word Hylian like Hylian, and I disagreed with her. And I thought a cool way to impress her would be to get an official statement from Nintendo proving I was right.
Oh, yeah, girls love being proved wrong in a new
That was the worst idea.
That's their favorite thing.
Did you get an official statement?
Yeah, I worked really hard to get it, too. It took me a while, and finally I did.
Wait. What did that entail? How do you work hard to get a statement from Nintendo?
I called as many numbers related to Nintendo as I could find until I eventually got through to somebody.
Oh, this is the best story ever.
And who was the somebody? Like, let's not skip this part. Like, was it like just someone who worked for the 800 number? Like, was it?
Yeah, it was somebody who worked for the 800 number.
Okay.
He said in the Japanese it's pronounced like this, which means in the English it would be highly and not Hylian, because they don't really have it ill. And I was like,
that there are people on the end of a phone line at Nintendo that have to answer questions like this. But
I kept calling until I got someone who was interested in answering my question. So I said, could you send me a statement? And they said, sure, what's your email address? And I sent them my AOL email address, and I printed that out, and she totally didn't even remember the argument. So that was that.
Nice.
that's one of the most depressing stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's up there.
But you know what? I love it.
Yeah, I saw that.
I agree.
I was about to say, as Elton John said once, sad songs say so much, and that's how I feel about that story that you just told us.
Mm-hmm.
It's time we go on to the Crightening Round. Oh, did I say Crightening Round? I meant Lightning Round.
Are you talking about Michael?
Are we talking about Michael Crichton? Are we talking about Michael Crichton today?
No, we are not talking about Michael
Crichton. Oh, that would actually be a great Lightning Round.
That's really what I thought you were going to do.
Title design for every...
Man! Dang, now I can't do that, but I'm going to do it anyway.
You can do it. We won't think about it.
I'm going to do it. All right. We're going to do a thing. A while ago, Tim hosted the show,
Heck
and,
yeah.
And for the lightning round, what we did was we ranked all of the Contra games. So week, we're going to rank all of the Devil May Cry games.
Oh, Devil May C, DM.
Oh, good. I haven't played any of them. Great.
That's cool.
Good. That's good. I've played all of them, and I can give you a ranking off the top of my head, but let's go.
My input is they're all the worst.
Okay. Yeah, but which is the least worst? We begin with the original Devil May Cry.
I don't like the original Devil May Cry that much because it has all of those weird fixed camera angle things. And okay, there's some pretty decent action in it, but it feels like a weird sort of let's make a new Resident Evil game, but not really. We don't really know what to do to make a new Resident Evil game, so let's just flop around with this thing.
Wasn't it more let's make a new Onimusha, or did that come later?
Well, Onimusha was also let's make a new Resident Evil.
It was, yes.
I think. And then maybe with
by now this was let's make a new Onimusha.
And it's like, who is this character? I don't know. He's a guy. And who is he fighting? I don't know. And it's just it just reeks of like a 9-year-old doing his homework like on the bus. So let's put it at the bottom so far.
Okay.
Also the top.
The bottom and the top.
That's the joke we make every time we do one of these lists.
Yeah.
Devil May Cry 2.
I would put Devil May Cry 2 on the bottom. Because as much as the first one feels like a child doing his homework on the bus, Devil May Cry 2 feels like a child doing his homework on the bus and then presenting it in front of the class. Because it pulls forward with momentum and conviction.
Can I add one more element to that?
Let's do it.
Is that he's presenting the book report in front of the class with an erection that he's trying to hide.
Oh yeah. Okay, all of that.
They had all that superfluous booby stuff in there, kind of.
There was a whole bunch of superfluous boobies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Devil May Cry 3, Dante's Awakening.
That one's up on the top. That one's all the way up on the top. Because it's actually the best... Wait, are you ranking Special Edition separately?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so it's on the top right now, but it won't be on the top when you get to Special Edition. So the one thing about Devil May Cry 3 is it's a bunch of kids. It's like... you know, the next day in school, all the kids are like, oh, here's that jerk Dante. We're just going to say his name was Dante. Danny. We're going to say Danny. Here's Danny was up in front of the class with the boner, you know. He's with the boner doing his dumb homework. And then, so the next day in school, Danny's just walking around the playground with a boner just going, hey, like that. And he's the champion of the whole school. That's what Devil May Cry 3 is. Okay, because it's just unabashedly stupid. There's like Dante eating a pizza while riding a missile, and it's like it's just like weird Ninja Turtles fan fiction, and it has some terrible exploration parts to it, but it's otherwise pretty good.
Devil May Cry 3 Special Edition.
The action is hard. The action is tough. It has that snap. It has that crunch. It's one of the best 3D action games of its sort that has ever been made, and. I mean, I can see how it could be a lot better, but it's no God hand. But it sure is good. So, what are you going to do about it, you know? Nothing.
Devil May Cry 4.
Devil May Cry 4 is not as good as Devil May Cry 3, but I actually like it. I like the motorcycle gun. Did you play Devil May Cry 4, Brandon?
Nah.
Okay, so there's a motorcycle gun.
I mean, I played one Devil May Cry, and I was like, oh, I understand that I will not like this series.
Yeah, if you want to, if you, like, for some reason feel like giving it a shot at some point, get the HD Devil May Cry 3 Special Edition thingy that's on the previous gen, the Prev gen consoles.
Yeah.
Is pretty good. The Xbox 360 one. I would recommend those. So, yeah, but Devil May Cry 4 is kind of cool because it has this motorcycle sword where you can press a button to rev it up. So it's like you're just needlessly jamming a button.
I remember that.
So yeah. You're revving it up so it can unleash stronger attacks, and that's cool. And the game forces you to do all of these. So it's so weird to me that fans actually care about the story and presentation of a Devil May Cry game. Like they're like, why isn't the hero Dante? It's like, well, I mean, he looks like Dante. He's a kid with white hair. He just looks like a younger Dante. I mean, I don't know. And then, of course, you become Dante halfway through the game, and then you have to like replay the whole game as Dante. And I mean, Devil May Cry games, that's all it is. It's you're just you just flopped in a room with some schlock and you're just beating it up. And the exploration stuff is dumb, but the beating stuff up stuff is just fantastic. And Devil May Cry 4, while not as good as Bayonetta, has really good, hard, sticky action. And it's not as good as Devil May Cry 3, in my opinion. But I like that motorcycle sword, so I want to put it above the Devil May Cry 2.
These
above Devil May Cry 2, but below Devil May Cry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No. It's above Devil May Cry 1. Sorry, under Devil May Cry 3.
Okay, so it's between May Cry and May Cry 3. Devil May Cry 4 Refrain for the iOS.
Oh, I just put that all the way on the bottom because those games are dumb. It's really right. I would just flop that to the bottom of the stack.
DMC.
We all know that iOS games are not real games, so
that's true.
Yeah. DMC Devil May Cry.
DMC Devil May Cry has some just kind of really, really bad action in it. It mixed in with some pretty good action, mixed in with some great action, like some tiny sprinklings of great action. It's Raisin Bran. It's two scoops of raisins, you know, and it's like, I don't really like those raisins that they put in there, and I would rather have more of the bran. So I would say that DMC... Oh, also, DMC is a point where, again, yeah, fans get mad at story stuff in Devil May Cry games, which just blows my mind. Like, I remember seeing some YouTube comments on Devil May Cry 3 videos where they're like, why is Dante, like, eating a pizza? That's so gay. It's like, do they just want to see Dante killing demons? I don't understand where any consideration of story enters into it, but as I played a bunch of that DMC, and the story is just aggressively, confrontationally mean-spirited, and I hated it. So, but the action, it looked good, and the action was pretty all right, so I would put it under Devil May Cry 4.
Bayonetta.
Is Bayonetta included in this?
Yes, I'm including Bayonetta.
So Bayonetta has an aggressively, confrontationally stupid story. It's not aggressively, confrontationally mean, but you know what? Game's pretty goddarn good, so I'd put it on the top. I'd say it's better than Devil May Cry 3.
And finally, Resident Evil 4.
Oh, Resident Evil 4. Man,
why?
Yeah, how is that in any way?
I think he's trying to throw a monkey wrench into this.
Because Devil May Cry started production as Resident Evil 4.
Oh, that is true. Yeah, they were like, let's make a new style.
But Resident Evil 4 didn't start production as Resident Evil.
As Devil May Cry.
We are comparing Resident Evil 4, the final product, to Resident Evil 4, the prototype as it was developed into Devil
May Cry.
Well,
that's a darn fantastic game, that Resident Evil 4, the one that actually came out. All I'm going to say about that.
I actually don't
think it's that good, yeah.
Yeah, Tim doesn't like it that much, but I sure like it better than all the rest of those games put together.
It's ropey and it's sloppy. It's not that great.
That's how I would describe all those Devil May Cry games.
Oh man, no, they're really snappy. If you play the good ones, if you play 3, play 3, man, it's good. It's got good action.
Just every time I'm in one of those, it feels like all of the action parts, which are supposed to be the fun parts, feel like I'm grinding in an RPG. It feels like a level grind to me.
Yeah. And I can see how that is.
Oh man, the whispering bird is like knocking its head against the wall.
Yeah, I hear a whispering bird. So I'm actually, I'm going to vote no confidence on even bothering to compare Resident Evil to Devil May Cry. Because Resident Evil 4... I mean, Resident Evil 4 is okay, but it kind of makes me question the whole video game institution when every quote-unquote video game critic just unanimously agrees, yeah, Resident Evil 4 is, like, the best action game ever made. It's like, I see way too many people say that, and it's like, man, it's not as good as Gears of War 2 at all. And I know it's not the same type of game, but... The end.
The end! This has been episode 79 of the Insert Credit Podcast. Thanks to our editor, Blaine Brown, for putting these together so promptly and putting them on our feed. You can find that feed on iTunes, just search for Insert Credit, or podcast.insertcredit.com. Follow us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/ICPodcast. We're almost to 500 followers. That's pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting. It's a lot of humans.
It is a lot of humans.
Presumably humans.
Presumably humans. You could follow us on Twitter. I'm Alex Jaffe. Frank's at Frank Cifaldi. Brandon's at Necrosofty. And Tim is at 108. Anything else we'd like to say?
No, I'm cool.
Nah, I'm good too.
Okay, send in your questions to podcast@insertcredit.com. Leave us your comments and feedback at same. And if you're here and you can put up with Google+, we will answer your questions after this live broadcast. I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Cifaldi.
I'm Tim Rogers.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
And now you're playing with podcasts.
Podcast over, yeah!